So we're here to talk podcasting because, you know, a lot of theaters, I should introduce who we are really first. That would be smart.
Oh, you can also start with what it's about. All right,
okay.
Sure.
Okay, well, we're here to talk podcasting. I'm David J. Lohr from 2AMT and...
I'm Jason Snell from the Incomparable Podcast, and I also write a lot about computer stuff for mostly Macworld, and so I have come to the podcast thing from the technical side as well as the creative side.
And we're here to talk podcasting because a lot of theater companies try podcasting, right? You go to their website and you see, oh, we have a podcast. Or you go to iTunes and search, you know, Actors Theater of Louisville, and boom, there's a podcast. And more often than not, it's an interview or a profile, and it's tied to a specific production. And once that production is closed, is anyone going to listen to it? Is there any reason to listen to it if you're not, you know, I mean, if you're really into costume design, yeah, you want to go listen to all the costume designers talk, but is that for your audience? Who are you trying to reach with the podcast? And the more I searched through and the more I looked at these, the more I realized we're broadcasting talkbacks that no one can talk back to. You know, I mean, if we don't like them to begin with, why are we pushing them on our audiences? And so I started looking at what kind of podcasts were out there that people were actually listening to. And shows like Welcome to Night Vale, I don't know if you've heard of that. It's regularly in the top 10 podcasts on iTunes.
Yeah.
The Incomparable has a ridiculously large fan base, as far as I can tell. And we don't even crack, what, the top 250?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, sometimes we do. Sometimes we're in the top 200.
And, I mean, with the tens of thousands of downloads that gets, that tells you how far you have to get to be in that top 10 all the time.
But the beauty of it is that, you know, you can do podcasting and reach 100 people or 200 people. And if it's the right people, it's in the theater world, if it's the people who are your audience or your target audience, then it can be a fantastic way to reach them. And
I mean, just knowing our numbers for the radio dramas we've done, just in the first week of each of those releases, they were downloaded by enough people that I'm from the Louisville area, so I'll compare it to Actors Theater of Louisville's main stage because I'm used to that. That's approximately a sold-out month-and-a-half run of a show in their biggest space. And that was just in the first week of downloads. And it's been, I mean, the first one was out about a year and change,
uh-huh.
And the second one was out about 6 months ago. And they're just growing. And it's people who are actively interested in it. They want more of it. And they're not just local. This is a global audience. I mean, we get messages from, what, Finland and Germany and Japan. And it's like a contingent in Australia that loves us. Still cracks me up. So, I mean, you can reach beyond your immediate audience. So, you know, if I'm going on a trip to Washington, D.C., and I know I've listened to this theater do shows, I really want to see them while I'm in town. Why not? You know, and it's if you can create original content, this is art that's accessible to anyone in your audience, anyone in your community, and maybe that's going to draw them in. Maybe they think, oh, I don't want to see the Neil Simon show because it's already been a movie and it's already been turned into a sitcom several times and it's coming back next fall as a sitcom. I don't need to see that play. I don't need to go to that theater. But if you're doing something interesting or if you're hosting, you know, Welcome to Night Vale has been going on tour. And because of their popularity now, they sell out within hours most of the time, most places. Once in a while, they'll hit a city like Louisville where nobody knows them and they're still pitching for tickets the night of the show. But 90% of the time, you have to fight for tickets to these things. Same thing with the Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is a show based in Los Angeles. Trying to think of a couple of others. Basically, all of these shows are original scripted content. They come out on a regular basis. And they're all filled with theater people, but none of them originated at theater companies because theater companies go, I don't need to do that. And then they're going out on tour and selling out and being invited to places. I think Welcome to Night Vale was at the New York Comic Con last year, and they had to turn people away from the room. They had hundreds of people in the room, and there was more demand. It's sort of funny why we're not trying to get that audience. Even shows like Wits, which is from Minneapolis, Livewire Radio in Portland, Oregon, Sandbox Radio up in Seattle. These are more mixtures of music and comedy sketches, and it's more like a Prairie Home Companion style kind of thing. But again, huge audiences, always filling up, and they're done in partnership with local public radio, because that way they get a little more support for the actual show and for getting guests. They're getting the distribution and the attention from the radio, and they have an easy access to a venue, because the venue says, hey, I want to work with the radio station and get free advertising for me. So, you know, we can do these things. I mean, we're developing a show at my own theater with Louisville Public Media, which would be the same kind of thing, sketches and music and all. And that just draws the local community in and says, hey, you know, here's a thing for you to see. Maybe you'd like to see all these other things we do. Maybe you didn't even know about them. Why not? It's something that we call, at 2AMT, we call it Never Be Dark. And it doesn't mean that you're always open all the time, every day, doing stuff. But you have something new each week. And maybe it's a small-scale thing. Maybe it's just one musician performing. Maybe it's a stand-up comedy. Maybe it's an improv group or, you know, what have you. But there's something simple and new every week in your building to make people think of it. If you have one show that runs for 6 weeks, you know, technically, and I've gotten this from so many marketing departments, they go, oh, we're Never Dark. We have something going on every week. No, you have the same show for 6 weeks. If I've seen it, I'm not thinking about your building for another 6 weeks. If I don't want to see it, I'm not thinking about it for 12. If I don't want to see the next show, that's, you know, it keeps stretching out. Or I'm looking at the ticket price and going, I don't want to pay $35 for the Neil Simon show. Nothing against Neil Simon. Great writer. But I have The Odd Couple memorized. It's okay.
It's a ladle. You don't even know it's a ladle.
Now it's garbage.
One of the things that I was thinking when I was thinking about what we would talk about here was about this concept of continuity. The ability... When I think about my local theater company, which is the Marin Theater Company, because I live in Mill Valley, California, I think about... Very similar to what you just said, which is my relationship with them is one night 6 times a year if I'm a season ticket holder. And if right. I am picking and choosing and distracted and things like that, it might be 3 times a year or 2 times a year, 4 times a year. And that's an incredibly talented group of people, an incredibly talented creative organization in my community. It's like a mile from my house. And I feel like that relationship should be... more continuous, that if I like what they're doing, there ought to be other ways. And the way it's set up, they have the ability to produce 6 shows and a year, and that's what they do. And then they've got a young actors program that they do in the summer, but it's a very limited engagement. It's they put on great shows, but there is no continuity from week to week or month to month. And without saying what that could be, because you're right, it could be things that are promotional for what they're working on. It could be things that are completely tangential. It could be things that are promoting a playwright whose play is going to be staged next year, but they also wrote something small, or there's an interview with them or something like that. Or it could be that the creative director has an outlet to do something else other than the one thing that he's staging,
right.
In our case. So I'm the beauty of the podcast medium is not only is it an audio medium, so the visual aspects and the costs of putting on a production that's so visual go by the wayside, but it's a subscription-based medium. You can download a podcast episode and listen to it, but people are subscribing. That's what you do. You click subscribe in iTunes or in a podcast app on your smartphone, and new episodes appear on a regular basis, which is really compelling and allows you to have that relationship if you can push content through. Mm. And
And literally theater in the palm of your hand.
Yes. And
anywhere you go.
And it really, because the bar is lower, and we can talk a little bit about the technical aspects, because I think one of the reasons why these things emerge from public radio or other kind of radio programs and not from theater companies has to do with the perception that this is daunting technologically, which when I see the technology that goes into staging a live theater production, I think it's a little different, but it is not that different. If you have to get your audio right, you are pretty much all the way there.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of thinking, look, coming from the media business, it's a matter of thinking about, we had to learn how to post stories on a website instead of in a magazine or a newspaper. And it's like that. There's an opportunity here for different kinds of creative output. Something that lasts 5 minutes or 10 minutes instead of 2 hours or an hour. And doing it monthly instead of quarterly. There are lots of different options because nothing in the podcast medium itself says it needs to be this length. It needs to be this often. That's all kind of up to you. But the beauty of it is for a lot less effort and money and time, you can create something that has that gives you a level of continuity with your audience that is literally impossible to do with more traditional productions because those just can't happen that often. So I think that's one of the key things about this medium is that it can let you provide continuity at that level, and it go beyond the bonus track approach of, you know, like the Q&A sessions after an event or an interview with an actor, and actually have some creative stuff in the mix too.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing against interviews with actors, but almost everyone sounds the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same questions. And you know, we'll complain about, why do audiences always say, how do you remember all those lines? Well, you know what? You asked pretty much the same thing in your podcast. That's, you know.
Also, I wanted to mention a sample of content. And I know that there can be some rights issues and all that, but there are also some really positive things about either a sample of content or experimenting with forms. If you're considering, like, Ren Theater just put on Failure, a Love Story, which was great. I just saw it. It was fantastic. And that has a very interesting structure with music and characters are rotating and you have the same actors playing many characters. And it's what is it? Is it a musical? Is it a comedy? Is it a black comedy? Is it a family drama? It's lots of things. And I was thinking as I sat there, this is also, it could practically be a radio drama.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's different and it's a different kind of storytelling mechanism, that would, I thought this would be an interesting thing to expose people to and say, you know, what your vision of what going to the theater is not the only kind of thing that we produce.
Right.
But how do you do that? And it's by showing them maybe it's a bit from the show, or maybe it's something like that when you're thinking about producing it the next year, if you're
right,
working that far in advance.
And I mean, another beautiful thing is you can build podcast recordings into your event season to say, you know, if your whatever you're doing gets popular enough, open it up, make it an event, have a live audience, and make it free if you can, just to get people in there to see it. Because again, Night Vale Radio has been recording some of their live shows, and they sell those. The podcast itself is free, but they've been selling the tracks from the live shows just to help raise more money to sustain the show. And they're a lot of fun, and the energy is very different from the regular recordings, which they do just on their own. But it's a lot of fun, and again, that's why it's getting swarms of attention. It's getting book deals. It's getting, you know, it's crazy. One project that I wanted to bring up was, especially thinking about yesterday's talk about game design in theater. The company Dog and Pony DC has done some wonderful stuff. They did a show called The Killing Game, which is basically a life or death post-apocalyptic game where the audience is different factions. You know, some of them wind up as zombies, some of them wind up as health workers. I mean, it's amazing. And they have another show that I was literally thinking of this last night in bed going, oh, I should mention Beer Town. Beer Town is a show, they brought it back several times, that it's about a community that is trying to decide what goes in their time capsule, what is going to be what they want people to know. And they decide anew every 5 years. So it's, well, do we take this out of the time capsule? What should we put into the time capsule? So they have all the members of the community, and the audience is assumed to be members of Beer Town. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, okay, it is a game. It's a different every time. You know, you can see every performance in a single run of it. It's going to be a different show. But, you know, it's one step to being a podcast. I would love to hear the ongoing stories of life in Beer Town. And who are these people that are trying to decide what's in the podcast or in the time capsule or in the podcast? I'm drunk. No. And, you know, so I was talking with Rachel from Dog and Pony this morning, and I said, you know, give me the one line description so I don't screw it up. And what are you doing with it? And they're taking that on the road now, not as the company, but sending one or two members of the company out to a theater and producing it with that theater company. And that's just going to add even more, because now it's not just them setting up the parameters. It's the people in that specific community going, okay, we can bring this into Beer Town, or we can do this with Beer Town. And I mean, there's so much possibility between podcasting and game design and you know, and even Taylor Mack yesterday saying that basically just go out and make your thing. There will be a place for it. This is a place for it. You know, why not? I mean, that's kind of
right.
How.
Right. And so the first angle was talking about using it as continuity for your traditional kind of theater audience. But this is the other, I think, incredible opportunity, which is to start thinking, if you're in an organization that does theater today, thinking of it as a creative organization that has other avenues of output beyond the stage, beyond your venue. The flexibility of this medium, I mean, us doing those two radio, ridiculous radio plays that we did that had this amazing, amazing reception. But that was somebody who writes plays and a bunch of computer nerds who do a podcast.
With one or two people who had some
theater experience. Right. So I think that's something that it's very easy. And again, I'm going to go back to my media experience here. It's very easy to say I'm a newspaper reporter. I'm a magazine editor. I don't do websites. I don't do video. I don't do audio. It's very easy to do that. My job is X, and I'm never going to look up from that. And if I did something different, I would go somewhere else and do it. I think it would be really interesting for organizations like this, arts organizations, creative organizations like this, to think about their purview as going beyond what they think today, and to say, we could, why wouldn't we, if we've got a writer we love working with, or somebody on the staff is a great writer of some kind of thing, why would we not? We know actors. We know how to produce programs. Some theater companies do produce live radio play shows.
Right.
Now on stage in Marin 2 years ago, one of the shows was a radio play show, and it was fantastic. And the potential audience for that is enormous. And yes, there's no way to really to charge people for a podcast, but it's an amazing medium. Mm. The fans, people make connections to podcasts and become fans of them in a way. I receive more positive feedback from 3 years of doing The Incomparable than from 15 years about writing about Apple, which is a group of serious fans, because the words on the page do not have the same power as a voice.
Yeah.
In your brain, it doesn't have the same power. So that there is an opportunity there, whether it is to build this audience so that you can tour with something, or sell T-shirts, or sell the recordings on iTunes later, or what? I mean, who knows? I don't know. This is a young medium, and I don't really know what all of the business opportunities are here. But in terms of it being a creative outlet and providing visibility, mm-hmm. and maybe letting you experiment with things that you would be too afraid to go all in on, but it, you know, doing 15 minutes of it on a podcast is not that scary.
Right. Right. I mean, we produce most of what we do is just with a regular consumer microphone on a home computer using Skype to connect. So,
yeah.
episodes of The Incomparable sound like we're usually in the same room. We're all over the country.
We're never in the same room. Yeah, this is rare.
This is rare.
Actually, it's worth talking about the technical stuff if you think that.
Well, I just want to take one short sideline
into
how to finance it, because that's going to be the first thing is, you know, oh God, that's going to be money. Well, again, most of what we do is free. You know, we're not huge. You know, I mean, we just sort of slap it together and it sounds good somehow. And we'll get to that. But there are ways to fund it. I mean, we have sponsors now, which is nice.
Right.
And there's a group called Midroll Media. Is that what they're called now?
There are Midroll is an ad network for podcasts, and there are many smaller ones that are springing up because the advertisers are realizing that this same connection that makes the medium so powerful for the audience can make it powerful for advertisers or underwriters or however you would want to call it.
Right.
So that there's definitely some opportunity there.
And then you have some people have said, well, could we kickstart it? I said, well, sure, but that's one thing, right? And you have to do all your hustling to get everyone to go to that one campaign. There's a site called patreon.com. It's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. So it's patron with an E shoved in the middle. And
makes more Latin that way.
The idea behind it is recurring crowdfunding. It was originally designed for musicians and artists who would have, and writers, who would have a steady output. And the idea is, they can set goal levels. So they say, all right, if I can reach $1,000 per every story I put out, I can put out more stories. If I reach $2,000 per story, I can put out even more stories. If I reach $3,000, I can quit my day job and just write. And it's working. And comic book artists are doing this. Podcasts have started doing this. It was originally developed by Jack Conti, who's half of the band Pomplamoose. And they had looked at how their YouTube videos, I mean, they're wildly popular on YouTube, millions and millions of video views, but you can get a little revenue from ads popping up on your YouTube video. And they were getting, you know, pennies a month for these millions of views. So Jack said, you know, we could set this up so that people are actually paying us to do our work if they like our work. And it's you're not going to get everybody who watches it to pay, but you're encouraging the people who do want to pay to do that so that you can keep doing it and so that it can be free to everybody else to just make it accessible. I mean, go search for Jack Conti and Patreon to see a couple of interviews with him. He's really hyper excited about it. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. The other thing about podcasting and attention, I mean, the YouTube video views kind of reminded me of this. The more Facebook is changing their algorithms, you know, it's harder to put out a post and expect anyone who follows you to see it. And the idea is they want you to buy ads. But even when you buy ads, you're still only going to reach this little tiny thing. I have a thing. I'll publish it on 2 a.m. next week. I forget the exact number, but I want to say that for even the top 10 brands on Facebook, their page views and attention to posts has gone down 50% in the last year because of the algorithm shifts. And because of that, they try to pump out more posts to go, oh, well, we have to keep putting out more and more and more. And that actually brings the average down even more because it's getting out to fewer people because they go, oh, you're trying to game the system without buying ads. Well, okay, change the algorithm. Mm-hmm. Podcasts are going to reach the people. I know one group, one company that put out a Facebook post and put the identical content out as an email. The email reached everyone who had subscribed to the email. So it was a couple thousand people. And it got a fair amount of click-throughs from that. There are more followers on Facebook. They only got 70 views. 70 of those followers got to see it. And only about 3 or 4 of them actually clicked on the information. Podcasts, I mean, 10, 20,000 people right there. If you can build that. You know, I mean, with the radio shows, we had the benefit of having a couple of years of incomparable shows building up to people listening. But it's possible. I mean, Welcome to Night Vale started from nothing. Nobody knew who this was when it started. It wasn't attached to anything. It wasn't. It's never been advertised beyond a venue saying, hey, Welcome to Night Vale is coming. And it's huge because it's good. Thrilling Adventure Hour, same thing, came out of nowhere. It has the benefit of having
famous people doing it. But Night Vale doesn't have that.
No. And it's, I think it's more popular on
it is
in downloads and all. So, you know, take some of that Facebook energy. You know, all the time you're wasting putting out stuff on Facebook, if the top 10 brands that spend millions can't get that attention, you're not going to get that attention either. Take that energy. Take your newspaper advertising. You know, how much does it cost to have an ad in the newspaper every week, every month? Take away one of those ads and put that budget towards podcasting. Just take it out of marketing and say, look, we're going to do this as a loss leader to get people in the show. You're probably going to get more people listening to the podcast than will even notice the ad, let alone, I mean, forget about the subscription, you know, the subscribers reading the paper. That doesn't mean they're going to look at your ad, you know, and they're going to say, oh, but we have a million subscribers. It's like, how is that translating? But the podcast is a direct connection to your audience, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah, that's we keep coming back to that. The thing that makes this medium so amazing, and I think will ultimately be wildly successful, there are technical hurdles. The fact that you can't go in a car and press the podcast button, that it, you got to fiddle with an app and attach it from your phone and plug it into the car. That said, I would say most of the people listening to podcasts today are trapped in their cars. They have decided that they would rather program their own radio instead of listening to terrestrial radio or satellite radio.
Or even like my kids, we have an Apple TV, and there is a podcast app that's just built in to the Apple TV. They will often choose to listen to stuff through the TV than watch TV, which cracks me up. You know, they're 12 and 9, and they're already like, I want to do this. This is more fun. I want to hear the adventures of the Red Panda. Sure. It's a show called Decoder Ring Theater from Canada that does it also does pulp 1940s kind of shows. And so, yeah, they love the Red Panda. Okay. I'd rather watch that. You know, oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Red Panda. Red Panda.
Red Panda. So that connection is so powerful, and that it, you can make it work for you. I mean, that's the beauty of this, is that they are, you know, more people use RSS, which is this technology that was supposed to, like Google Reader, and you can subscribe. It was supposed to revolutionize how people read, but it wasn't ever really that successful, ultimately, in terms of percentage of people around the world using it. That's the technology that drives podcasting, though, and podcasting is the one place where that technology has actually been extremely successful. And the power of it is you are subscribing to a feed and everything that goes in it. You know, podcast apps, you get an alert on your phone that says a new episode of this thing that you like just arrived. And it's like, oh, boy.
I can listen to the new Red Panda.
Right now. And so now you've got the power of what app developers spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to get, which is a push notification on your phone. Well, if somebody's got a podcast app and has subscribed to your podcast, you are pushing notifications to their device when you have something new to say, which is incredibly powerful. And then when they listen, they're identifying with the voices and they're feeling this attachment and they are forming an emotional bond that is way more powerful than the written word on a website. So we keep coming back to it, but it is the opportunity, the tools, the canvas, I don't know, I'm struggling for a metaphor here,
but stage.
But the stuff, the accoutrements of being in theater are the tools that are going to be, those are tools that are really perfect for this medium too. And that's why I think it's a good match, is that this is all about communicating. You know, you come a lot of theater productions, you close your eyes, you're still going to have a fantastic time. A lot of it is the audio. And so this is an all audio medium, but it's amazingly powerful, and people can fill in the blanks. And yeah, the Red Panda is, I'm sure, incredibly realistic.
Yeah. Well, and it's
albeit
funny,
Canadian.
Like with the segment I was editing before, you know, again, one person's in Atlanta, I'm in Indiana, one person's in Seattle, and when you listen to it, we're all in this crowded, smoky little bar in Austria, and it's 1947, right? And you hear the music, and you hear. That's what you can do with audio. You can make it as rich or as sparse as you want. I mean, you can give production value beyond the realism you see on the stage because we're going to fill in the blanks. You know, it's like Hitchcock used to like to say, "I don't have to show you this detail because what you imagine is going to be better than anything I could show you." And whether that's beauty or horror or whatever. That's where we make the connection with whatever we're listening to, watching, reading. You know, we fill in that blank with our associations, which again is really exciting to me.
So what we're saying is you have an unlimited costume budget and an unlimited set budget and an unlimited special effects budget.
And that's hard these days with funding in theater. Where was I going? Oh, and one of the things that we're doing at 2AMT is we're going to shift into having a podcast network as well. That has a series of short plays, that has a series of full-length plays. You can do this to introduce your community, to introduce other theaters to playwrights that you like. You know, everyone's saying, oh, we need to produce more women. Well, let's produce more women here and show off what they can do. It's easier to sit and listen to the podcast than it is to read 50 scripts, you know. Let's produce whatever we want. Let's produce our local playwrights. If you want to work with people in your community, build that connection. Make your local actors and your local playwrights and your local artists into the stars. Make them, you know, I hate to use the sports metaphor, but build a home team. Build people that your audience are going to root for, and they're going to want to see them on stage. And then you can say, you know, that guy from this radio serial that we put out, he's going to be the lead in The Odd Couple, so you might want to see it this time.
I was very excited when I saw Fences and Carl Lumley from Alias was in it.
Yeah.
So, I know, it's ridiculous, right? It's like, hey, no, you're on the... Also, he was in Mantis, that show about the...
Yes!
Where he was
yes.
the Batman, he was
I'm
a bug
shocked.
With an exoskeleton. Anyway, he's a great...
and Roger
and the thing is, he's such a great actor, and it is ridiculous that I'm thinking, well, I remember you were on this short-lived Fox TV series, but there was that there was just that little tiny spark of connection of like, oh, that guy, I know that guy, I like that guy, I'm excited to see him in this production, yeah. that if you create... You can create that with a podcast, where yeah. suddenly that actor, who is actually fantastic and has been in... a half dozen of your productions is now somebody that people are like, oh, yeah, I like that guy.
One of the things that cracks me up when we get feedback for The Incomparable is when people say, I was listening and I started taking part in the conversation and I wanted to talk with you guys.
We're not listening.
Right? And we're not there. And you know, it's even more powerful than Mantis or, you know, the yes. Short-lived show because
how is
these
that
are
possible?
Voices in your ear. These are connections to these people. It's funny to me that people identify that way, but they do.
And, well, you know. Our brains are wired to process this yeah. stuff, and our brains are not wired to process it as this is a recorded conversation that I am hearing through things stuck in my ears, or you know, or on stage. Our brain is processing that as I'm witnessing an event that's happening. Right? Our neurology is not. Any more sophisticated than it was 20,000 years ago, even though our culture is. And therein lies the power of live theater, and therein lies the power of podcasting, where, you know, your brain is not processing this as remote people. Your brain is processing right. it as I'm listening to my friends having a conversation, and now I would like to say something. And unfortunately, right. they can't hear you. I'm surprised we don't get more angry letters. It's like, why aren't you responding to my thoughts?
How could you forget this book series?
Yes, well, we like, do get well, that. I can't
we've
believe
never
it.
Read it.
Yeah, but, you know, that's how you can't forget personal. It if you don't know
yeah.
what it is.
I saw Equivocation a couple years ago at Arena Stage, and it was they took the Oregon Shakespeare Festival production and transplanted it, and it starred Anthony Heald as Shakespeare, and it was really funny having conversations after the show with people to say, "Oh, I loved him on Boston Public," or. I loved him in Silence of the Lambs. And my connection to Anthony Heald was that I saw him in Anything Goes at Lincoln Center in 1987. And these other things were like, oh, great, he got a paycheck. But this is what he really does. This is great. But we all had some kind of connection from something that we had seen over and over again that we had loved. And, yeah, I mean, you can build that. There's no reason why not. So speaking of building it, we should probably talk tech.
Yeah, right, because I do think that this is one of the major hurdles is it can be really daunting. Although, like I said earlier, if you're involved in putting on productions and dealing with the technical aspects there, I find that so much more daunting than podcasting stuff. But you can get started with podcasting with a microphone. If it's just you with a microphone that you can get for $50 on Amazon, the buying guide portion of the show is the Blue Snowball, Blue Microphones Snowball product is cheap. It's less than $50 and it's good. Their higher end product, the Yeti, is not quite as cheap, but it's about $100 and is basically that's the microphone that I would have a hard time recommending any other microphone, even the ones that are more expensive.
Even the Yeti Pro.
Yeah.
So if you have a Yeti, I mean, if you're in the same room with people doing it, do you just need one? Do you need both?
Right.
You can.
So the Yeti has an omnidirectional mode. It has a bidirectional mode where you can sit with two people across the table with the microphone in the middle, and it actually does a fantastic job of picking up both of those people. If you're doing it completely live, yeah, you can do it that way. You can also upgrade to like what we've got here is we've got a remote recorder and a couple of mics, or you can get a mixer. There are a bunch of different ways to do it. The nice thing about and actually, if you want the most pristine sound, even if you're all in the same town, one way to do it is to get to have people have these USB microphones at their computers and do a Skype call because then everybody's in their own space.
Yeah. Right.
And that's our productions have been not in the same town. We have people all over the United States, but that's how we do it. And the trick is to do something that people in the radio biz call a dual ender or a multi ender, where everybody records their end of the conversation. There's free software to let you do that. If you've got a Mac, you can actually use QuickTime Player. There's a new audio. People don't think about it. They think about it as a player. There's a command new audio recording, and you literally click the little triangle and pick your microphone and press the big red button, and it records the audio for you as you're talking.
It's QuickTime Player.
It comes with the computer. On PC, you can get Audacity is free. It's audio recording and editing software, and it'll let you again select your microphone. You press the big red button, and it records your end. And then what happens is somebody gets those files from everybody and stacks them on top of each other, and suddenly it sounds like you're all in the same room because you were all in your room when you recorded them, and the conversation.
And you have a master tracks so that you can line them up if you need to.
So you got
to
nudge them around.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And
yeah,
there
sometimes
are tools to do that, and you can use Audacity for that because it does multi-track. If you're on a Mac, GarageBand comes with the Mac. It's free, and it's a multi-track editor, so you can actually lay each person in and slide them around until they line up. It can be as complicated or as easy as you want it to be. You can also record in a room with some mics and just have that be it. Getting it to sound good, sometimes having isolated mics helps if you can turn off the air conditioning so it's not blowing during your whole thing. That can help a little bit. Getting rooms that that don't have like big glass windows but are things that are, you know,
sound absorbing.
Yeah, like in like a theater space might be a good place for that.
If you have a theater space.
That would not be a bad place. So there are lots of options, but the bar is pretty low because the software, if you've got somebody with a Mac, the software is free. The microphones are cheap, especially if you're recording remotely. Buying some microphones and a mixer to do it around a table or something would be a little more expensive and gets a little more techy. But again, if you've got somebody who's doing audio work for a live stage production, they know how to set that up. And even if in the end all you're doing is getting an out plug out of the audio mixer and recording that with a computer, that works just fine. It could be that easy. Or into a recorder like this that you can then just take the memory card out and pop it into the computer. So it can be, and editing software, you know, ranges from free to $500.
But. Right. And it's just, bless you. It just, you know, how much you want to spend, how much you can raise to spend, you know. From doing design work, I already had the Adobe suite, so I use Adobe Audition for all my editing. I don't know if you can still get that without the Creative Cloud.
No, I think you have to pay.
It's part of that now.
I think
I'm not going to do.
No, but there are other
really
options.
Good programs.
They're ranging from free to $500. That depending
even,
on what you want to do.
What is it? Logic.
Logic from Apple is $200.
Yeah.
And that's what I use. And I used GarageBand for years before switching because I wanted it. It's faster. It's more complicated, but it's better. But it was more expensive. But you don't have to do that. I would wager most podcasts on the internet are edited in GarageBand if they're edited at all. So it's free software.
I use a PC. I mean, that's my. But I do have Audacity.
Right. And Audacity will let you do some of this because it'll let you drop in multiple tracks and stuff like that too. And it's free. It's open source, free software. So there are lots of options. So I would say. Technical stuff doesn't have to be a hurdle. Recording.
You can build it up once you master this program and say, oh, this program's, a lot easier. Great. I worked in Photoshop and Quark, and when I found InDesign, I'm like, it's the love child.
Right. They all have things in common. They're all part of the same tree of stuff. And you learn and you grow. I mean, as with anything. Mm-hmm. But I would say don't let it intimidate you you guys are people who came to a podcasting session, so maybe it wouldn't intimidate you. Don't let it intimidate other people. Don't let them get intimidated by it, because the mechanics of recording, like I said, especially if you know somebody who does audio, it's going to be really actually easy. If you've got people that are scattered around, it's a $50 microphone, and that could be done pretty easily. Getting it on the internet is a little more complicated, but there are lots of options out there. A lot of podcasters use Libsyn, Libsyn. It's short for Liberated Syndication, but Libsyn.
I never knew that.
Yes. Libsyn is it's a freemium service, so you can upload a certain number of hours per month for free. And then above that, they want you to pay a relatively small monthly fee for more hours. I believe the download bandwidth is completely free with your account. It's just a matter of how much material you're putting up. And that's not a bad way to get started. Lots of podcasters use Libsyn. You can use SoundCloud. SoundCloud's podcasting support is in beta, so it's not widely available, and it's kind of weird. I would probably not recommend it. I would probably recommend people try Libsyn. There are some others out there, but I think that's the one that I would recommend people look at first, because basically it's a content management system for podcasts. You upload your file, you put in your text, you press save, and it does the feed, and it actually makes a little mini website, which you can use or not use. You can also post it on your existing website using the links and not use their little mini website that they make for you. And then submitting to iTunes is incredibly easy. You open iTunes, because iTunes really is sort of the number one podcast directory. You open iTunes, go to the iTunes store, go to the podcast section and scroll down, and on the little links on the right side of the screen, there will be at the very bottom, it says submit a podcast. And literally you put in your Apple ID, so you have to sign up for an Apple ID if you don't have one. You paste in the feed address that you got from Libsyn or someplace else, and basically wait a few days and they will approve it. And then you're on iTunes, and any search for you on iTunes will find you. iTunes approval takes a few days because it's actually manually approved by a human being.
Yes. See, with the
just
for the total series.
Yeah, and you put in like what kind it is and whether it's got explicit language and all those things. You sort of put in the meta information and submit it, and then they validate it and approve it, and then everything else happens automatically.
And one thing I've used with podcasts, because I'm not anywhere near as technical in terms of this kind of stuff, but we do have one podcast from 2AMT already, And our site is a WordPress site, basically. And so I use
PodPress?
It's by Blueberry.
Oh, Blueberry, right.
I think, yeah.
So if you've got a WordPress blog, there are actually WordPress plugins that will do podcasting for you. You need a place to put the file, but that may actually be on your WordPress installation.
Yeah, I just have them on my server because my server has, quote-unquote, unlimited space.
Sure.
And then I just put the address of where that file is. I type that into the little input box in the plugin on the page. I mean, I just make a post for the new episode, and it has the thing saying Blueberry plugin. Yeah. Where is your thing?
That's a great point.
Then you hit click.
Yeah. So the WordPress plugins, Blueberry and PodPress is the one that I've used, are like this, where they basically just add podcast elements to the form that you use when you're posting in WordPress, and you upload through the form, and it. Or put in the link to where the file is, and it just sort of magically does the rest, which is really cool.
And when you start with it, it will walk you through how to submit to iTunes through their thing and what to type in there, and it's painless.
That's great.
It's remarkable. So
awesome.
Yes. All right, let's talk about socks. but now, any questions? I mean, let's open it up. Well, I think part of it is simply that it's just quality programming. I mean, I listen to a lot of BBC radio, and they never stopped. They never stopped. They have several stations where they're continuously running older sitcom things that they started as radio shows to try out before they became TV shows. They're still writing original stuff. They're still supporting. They have an afternoon play every day. They have a Saturday drama every Saturday. You know, and Tom Stoppard is writing radio plays. He never stopped, you know, and you think, wait, Tom Stoppard writes radio plays? Indian Ink started as a radio play. Several of his stage works started that way.
But the point is that U.S. terrestrial radio obviously abandoned these formats. Yeah. And I do think the reason that podcasting, the first time it sort of came on the radar, it was before there were smartphones. And I think sitting at your desk listening to a podcast is less good. But this resurgence has been that now that people have smartphones, and like I said, so many podcast listeners, not all, people listen while they're running or doing the dishes or whatever, but so many of them are in cars during their commute, and were completely dissatisfied with what radio was giving them, and have decided they're going to program their own radio, and the podcast apps on smartphones let you do that. So I feel like that's what's driving it, is people savvy enough to hook up their phone to their car radio now can control that, and that the medium will explode once either that connection becomes incredibly easy or something like podcasts gets built into the UI of a car dashboard in the next 5 or 10 years. I think most likely, like Apple, the next version of the iOS, the iPhone operating system, will apparently have the podcast app built in, permanently loaded on the phone.
And they'll have an iCar.
And sure.
with your iWatch.
Yeah. Well, they are trying really hard to do integration. I know on the Android side, the same is true, where I think everybody who makes a phone realizes that these car radios don't it's bad old technology, and then once you get it, it never updates again, and then you've got this device in your pocket that's new every couple of years. And so the shift seems to be toward making the car dashboards really smart about one thing, which is being a reflection of whatever your phone wants it to do. And that's going to be great for podcasting, because then you will get the podcast button on your dashboard. It'll be coming from your phone, but it'll still be on your dashboard. And that, I think that will, the easier it is for people to get over the hump of what's podcasting, where they can tap a button and see a directory and pick a type of thing and be like, you know, what are they called? I mean, Stitcher is doing this, and then there's another app that
iHeartRadio. TuneIn Radio?
Oh, there are several where they're like podcast dynamic podcast apps where you sort of say, I'm interested in science, and it builds a playlist of episodes of science podcasts for you. And that's like a radio station.
You'd have like Radio Lab and Star Talk and the Infinite Monkey Cage
and Science Friday.
Automatically.
Right. And you can say, like Pandora, you can say, I like this, I don't like this, and it adjusts the playlist. So that's all happening. So we'll get there. But even now, I think that the dissatisfaction with what's on the radio, I mean, I don't listen to the radio anymore. In the car, I listen to podcasts. And now that the Bluetooth and smartphones and Bluetooth stereos and car dashboards, that I think is the number one driver of people listening to podcasts.
Now, as far as rights limitations, because there is the internet and radio and all the performing arts unions, what's the one thing we should be aware of?
That's a good question. I know that the Night Vale group had to deal with someone who was taking their episodes and reposting them, but adding advertising around them.
Whoa.
So they were making money off that, and they're trying to stop it. There was another group who was doing a Night Vale prequel set in high school, and they said, here's the thing. It's all right if you want to do this, if you want to expand the world, if you want to do fan fiction. I mean, that's fine, but don't make it out to be an official Night Vale podcast. If you want to support us, that's great. But if you're doing this, you're not supporting us. You're undercutting us.
Right. I would say, it's a public performance. Okay. I am not a lawyer. David is not a lawyer.
Thank God.
It is a public performance. If you want to do a radio staging of somebody's short play, you obviously they need to give you permission to do that, and you may need to pay them. I know, pay the writer. That's a crazy idea for it. Heaven forfend. Being a podcast, it may be considered. I mean, it is essentially radio. It may be considered. You could have a good negotiation about what would be the content of that and what's the audience. And do you know if you're only going out to 5,000 people, on one level that's a lot and on another level it's not very much. Yeah. I think it's going to be a case-by-case sort of thing, but it is a public performance. It is recorded and broadcast. I don't recommend this, but you can take episodes down. So you could do something that appears for a month and then, it won't delete off people's phones, but you can make it so that nobody new can discover that episode. If there is an issue of, I don't want this staging to be there forever. You could say it's for a year or 6 months or something like that. And then it gets replaced with a placeholder that says, sorry, this used to be here, but it's not anymore. You can do that. They don't really get cached. People can walk away with their recording, but nobody else will ever be able to do it that way outside of, if there's a crazy podcast piracy site somewhere. But, in terms of the real world, that you can do stuff like that. But it's a good question. I mean, this I would say is essentially no different than a public radio station saying we want to do a staging, a radio play version of this thing that you wrote.
Right.
Or with an actor or a director or anybody else.
Right. The other thing that pops to mind when you said that is if you want to license music, existing music from something else, like, you want to use this song, or you just want to do an original version of the song, if you want to play a cover of it, you can go to the website for the Harry Fox Agency, and they have a thing, I want to say it's called Songfile, and they have very reasonable prices for licensing a song. So, say you want Your show will not work unless you have Margaritaville. You can't have a song that sounds like Margaritaville. You can't have Daiquiri Town. It has to be Margaritaville. Daiquiri Town is a good title.
It's near Beer Town.
Ah, damn it.
A little south along the beach.
Yeah, it's on one of the keys.
Yeah.
It's nice. But you can go to Songfile and look up the song, and it will give you several levels. So you can say, you know, is this for a CD? You're just recording this for a CD to sell. Is it going to be, you know, 1,000 impressions, 5,000 impressions, 10,000, 25,000, a million? You can, I mean, it scales up to that. Is this for a podcast? Is this for a public performance? Is this just for, I'm going down to the bar and singing live guitar and singing American Pie and torturing these poor, poor eating customers. Eating customers? I'm drunk.
Yes.
Anyway, but it's really easy and it's really affordable. I mean, we licensed a song a couple of years ago for a play that I think the total thing we said, okay, it's only going to be six performances. So the grand total, I think it was about $30, and maybe James Taylor got five of that, you know, but it's really affordable for that. And then it keeps you in the clear.
So I guess like ASCAP and CSAC doesn't cover
those. Well, that's they're tied in. It's it's all one giant system.
Yeah, there are these clearinghouse systems that will pay everybody their thing
right.
for the license.
I guess what you're saying is like if we have ASCAP and CSAC for our venue.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that might. And you can ask them, talk to them about that because they may say, yeah, it's the same, or it's a little less, or it's a little more, or we've never thought of that. Or
they may
know,
say that.
It's entirely possible.
That?
But no one's going to listen to that. So.
Question: you were talking about sound effects.
Do yes.
You have like a package that you bought.
You can.
Effects?
So here are the things. There are. First off, again, I keep coming back to this, and I'm sorry because I have been writing about this for so long, but. One of the things that people don't know is every Mac doesn't only come with GarageBand. It comes with a library of sound effects and music, all of which are royalty free.
Yeah.
So find a friend with a Mac is what
or
I'm saying.
Or you could
get one.
Well, there's also a website called freesound.org.
Freesound.org.
Which is the free sound effect archive.
Yeah, and it's some of those are Creative Commons, which essentially means that you need to put...
you just need to list who made
who
the
it
sound.
Is in the show notes, essentially, which we used for a bunch of sound effects for our radio drama, along with... and I used a whole lot of the Apple sound effects, and there are lots of them. And then if you get Logic or Final Cut from Apple, it comes with more. And then there are online... music and sound effects libraries that you can buy, and there are also a lot that are in that are free, that are of varying quality, but some of them are amazing. I found there was one that I was like, well, they're shot in the dark. They're not going to have this on Freesound, and it was literally they had it. It was a guy. I forget what it was, but somebody took a microphone to a place that was like exactly what I wanted the ambiance to be, and recorded 2 minutes of this ambiance.
It's
like,
a buoy.
Oh my god!
It's a buoy ringing.
Yeah, in the
for
distance.
2 minutes in the distance
on the beach
with a foghorn. And it was like all the elements were there, and it was like, oh my god! I mean, for the Viennese
and there are people
bar,
out there who do that.
The ambient noise I had for the bar is actually from a Viennese bar, because it was that specific in the notes. The GarageBand sounds are really cool too. One of the things the Incomparable is famous for is the spoiler horn.
Right, so if we're going to talk about a spoiler for something, we blow the spoiler horn so you can run away.
Which is literally...
I have people say, hey, we want to use... Is it okay? Do you have your permission? Could we use the spoiler horn? And can you get me the file? And what I say is, do you have a Mac? Because if so, it's on your hard drive. It's called Fairy Foghorn, and it comes with GarageBand, and it's... It's just like, oh, what do you mean? I feel like now I almost own that sound effect, but it is there for everyone to use. And every now and then I hear one of those GarageBand effects somewhere, and I'm like, you're using GarageBand. But it's amazing that this is just, you know, computers come with a sound effects library. How crazy is that? But that's the case. So that's a good place to start. Freesound is great, and there are lots of other libraries. You'd be amazed at the stuff that's out there. Also, you can make your own.
Well, exactly.
You know, with that USB microphone, we for the radio drama, we had a couple of our colleagues went down into the basement of their apartment building and like were dropping rocks on the floor and punching pillows and stuff like and walking with shoes and.
Did it look anything like that Janine Garofalo MTV's TV Awards skit where they're punching?
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably, yeah.
Except
yeah.
lower rent than that, but yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like if you watch The Fantastic Mr. Fox. If they just came out with a new fancy, like all the special edition DVD stuff, It talks about how they actually, all of it was recorded in realistic settings. So when they're running through leaves in the woods, George Clooney is crawling and running through leaves in the woods as he's recording the audio. So you can do that too, if you really want. I was going to say,
If you get George Clooney, I recommend you do that.
Yeah.
But I
had never said anything about the spoiler horn to my kids. You know, they just know it from the show. Right.
Yeah.
And
you're not doing it justice. It goes on for a minute.
It's hilarious.
It's funnier after the first
And now it's
seconds.
A character in one of our radio dramas because it just is.
It just is.
And,
Foghorn.
A couple of weeks ago, I'm sitting in my office and the kids are out in the living room playing on the iPads. And my 12-year-old has started messing around in GarageBand. And all of a sudden, I just hear, oh my God! It's like, what's wrong? Dad!
How could it be?
It's like, sound effects.
Sound effects. So. Sound effects are a lot of fun. And what I learned is that it's an awful lot of work, but without them, it's lacking something. You take those sounds for granted, and then you realize none of them are there when you were recording in your quiet room with a multi-ender and all of that. Yeah. And then it's like, and it's like you're in a blank, literally a blank space, and every sound in it needs to be created. But there are lots of libraries, and I should talk about Ambiance too. Something, a tool like GarageBand or a lot of audio editing tools will also have an atmospheric plugin of some sort that's around that lets you do things like add some reverb, add some room echo, and things like that. And that can help a lot too. People don't want to hear a succession of voices in perfect spaces because then you don't think that you're in that place in Vienna sound all echoey and
one of my favorite,
bumping the table.
My favorite thing from the Christmas radio show, I set one of the stories in a roller drome. And it was basically a spoof of the Twilight Zone episode, A Game of Pool, except instead of being about pool and billiards, it's about roller derby. And so you have the echo and you have the roller skates and you have, you know, all this reverberation and you have the air conditioning and you have, I mean, if
I think
if
I used like hear, a shopping cart sound effect or something and just had it going and going and going and going.
And I mean, having heard the straight voices from recording and then hearing the finished product, I mean, it's night and day. And so, you close your eyes, you're there because you have that echo and, hey, what's going on down there? It's like, oh, it's fine.
So that's a good point because that's something that I wanted to mention, which is the endless amount of work you can do on audio. And I want to mention that because it leads to despair and it shouldn't. You can literally edit audio forever. I mean, literally forever. You could, to the end of time, the sun swells and melts the earth, and you're still editing audio.
That was the Christmas show.
In your spaceship. There's a scene at the end of Cosmos. Neil deGrasse Tyson is on GarageBand as the universe is ended. Put it in there. Spoiler horn, the universe ends at the end. So here's what I would say is it's obviously different if you're editing a conversation versus editing something that's scripted and you want to get the right take. But what I would say is pauses and stutters and ums and uhs, you can take them all out. You'll be there a long time. And my feeling is, not to get back to my various feelings about how the brain processes sound, but our brains process sound from people talking like people talk, which is they pause and they backtrack. And that's real talking. And if you remove all of that, not only are you spending huge amounts of time, but I'm not sure it actually appreciably improves. Sure, if somebody is totally fallen over themselves and has to get back up and start again, maybe you trim that out. But the occasional false start and pause and here's what I think. I always leave that stuff in.
It's very naturalistic.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
So you
could
play.
You could do that forever. You could add sound effects forever. In fact, for Christmas, when I was like, David, I need it. We're gonna post it now. I'm sure he was in there saying, no, more clinking of glasses and singing of polka music and
more gunshots. Gunshots. Yeah. I need a different gunshot because I already used this one.
So you
twice.
Can go forever, but you'd be surprised at what you can do with a little. A little goes a long way. Yeah. A little editing goes a long way, and it doesn't have to be. So I guess what I'm saying is if you find yourself or people you know getting into this, watch for that because it can be very easy to be, oh, God, I spent 15 hours editing that. And I do a weekly podcast that's an hour, hour and a half, and I spend a couple hours editing it. I do not spend 10 hours editing it. I could, but I don't because I've learned to draw the line. And this with creative people, this is very difficult to say, which is you have to draw the line where it's good enough. It's never going to be perfect. It's that saying about how art is never finished, only abandoned.
I was just going to say.
You have to choose where to abandon it, and you have to choose a realistic place because otherwise you'll be there forever. And then you'll say, we can't do podcasting. It's too much work. And it doesn't have to be that much work.
Right. Well, and talking about ums and ahs and everything reminded me a couple years ago I did a play where I actually wrote it the way people talk, and they interrupt one another, and they talk over one another, and they don't always finish sentences or thoughts, and they do have ums, and it's, oh, and wait, no, and hey, and it was the hardest thing to convince. I mean, the director got it very quickly, but the actors wanted to know what the full sentence was. What was I going to say? Yeah. And then it was like, well, I should say the whole thing. It's like, no, the point is that you're getting interrupted. I mean, yeah, okay, you should know what your thought process is, but at the same time, you should figure it out from what's already there. I shouldn't have to tell you that part, but okay. You know, and it's okay to be a little naturalistic. It's okay to have those ums and uhs because, yeah.
You could sand something off to the point where it is completely
perfect.
And you'll still
think, there's one more. One more.
Until the end of time.
Yeah.
It's totally true.
But it looked cool.
Yeah. So I think it's worth, I think that's worth thinking about, that this shouldn't, it doesn't need to take forever. It doesn't need to be a big thing. You can make it a big thing if you want. And I just don't. I mean, for some things, it's amazing, like Radiolab, which is a
very heavily produced.
Yeah.
But
it is beautiful, and it is a work of it is a work of editing. When I was in high school, I actually did, from one of my video projects, I did essentially an editing project where it wasn't about the material, it was about the crazy amount of editing that went into it. Well, that's fine. It's of a kind. It's a sort of a genre, and Radiolab is like that. It's sort of about the storytelling through the editing and the choices of the clips they use. But that's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, I remember editing a video for a production at the college where I work at sometimes. And one of the students was doing an independent production of Tone Clusters by Joyce Carol Oates. Really interesting, really disturbing one-act play. It's about it's like the parents of this kid who has gone nuts killing a girl, but they're being interviewed on a 60 Minutes type show. He reset it as more of like The Tonight Show, which was a little interesting. And he wanted to add video projections of, you know, just like very fast cuts of the kid getting arrested and the crime scene. And so he shot all of this stuff and he had no idea how to edit it. And we sat down and in one night we learned how to use Adobe Premiere, and he drank a lot of AMP soda. And I think I osmosed it from him because I didn't drink any of it. But by about 4 in the morning, we're both just sort of jittering and it's really exciting. And, you know, oh my God, and it's going to be subliminal and they're going to see this. And it'll be like, you know, a fraction of a second. And it's blah, 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 blah. And the next morning we watched it and you couldn't. I mean, it was just boom, done. And we're like, oh, that's supposed to be like 4 minutes. That's 38 seconds. Shit. And so then we re-edited it down, and then we sort of lengthened it out. And even then, it was still... And I think we did more work on the video than we did on the actual show. Because for this little tiny thing, half an hour show.
It's a really easy rabbit hole to fall down.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know how to use Premiere now. So
yeah, more.
So if you're putting out...
As much or as little as you want. I mean,
yeah. No, you guys.
So we did.
Oh, well,
so,
specifically us.
So for the
us. Okay.
So,
right.
So we did.
Okay.
We the Christmas spectacular. Was how long was that?
90 minutes.
90 minutes. So that was too long.
It was twice the length of the first one we did because it was Christmas.
I was going to suggest that we cut it, but David had written all of them with Christmas themes, so you literally couldn't delay it because it would then be out of date. So that took how many hours did you edit yours for?
About 20.
We did
for about a 12-minute segment.
Yeah, and I did. Mine probably was about 40 hours for the rest of it, and then we had some recording time, so that's another like 10 hours of recording time, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's a lot, but that
6 weeks.
But that was a ludicrous amount of material. I mean, yes. 90 minutes. Nobody should do that.
Drama.
Yeah.
We're
talking about doing
intensive.
A new season of that radio drama as its own podcast, and we're talking about it being what, less than 20 minutes per episode for
20 to 30 minutes tops.
Here we go.
Tops. Well,
here we go.
90,
okay, let's say 20
minutes.
Let's say 20
no, no.
minutes in a season of 8 episodes that
right.
we can do the whole thing before we drop it. So we'll work in advance, but I'd say it can expand or contract. The first one we did, I edited the whole thing, and it took me twice as long to edit that as the second one because I got a lot better once I realized how sound effects worked and how ambiance works and how dialogue works in those places.
One of the nice things in a lot of these systems is that you can actually create a pan in the sound, so you can add the footsteps and then you can make it sound like they're walking from ear to ear, but that takes a few
seconds.
That's
another rabbit hole.
That's
a whole other rabbit hole.
Yeah. It's like, so, you can have, that's one thing I had a little too much of, people walking back and forth.
But
at the same time,
you could literally, so what I'd say is it can be as sophisticated as you need, but on the other level, lining up the dialogue that we were going to keep, the good dialogue, putting in a background audio track of like room tone, and
which is just
seriously, and that's on Freesound too, and you can get it, and then that adds some atmosphere, and then adding the most fundamental sound effects like the cock of the gun and it goes off and a scream or something like that
and a body
falls. If you do like a sack of potatoes, if you do all of that, that's pretty good. Then you're in the last 2% after that. All the stereo panning and the it can be a lot less. And also you can have it be a table read with no sound effects at all, or just people like hitting the table and stuff.
Or the stage manager reading the sound effects.
Yeah.
Or
it's completely abstract.
I have this guy in a bar in Vienna, but I really want to hear the kid on the pogo stick one block over. That would just make it.
There was an article in the New York Times this spring on the Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf new release of the audio recording, and they talked about the sound. They talked about how it really created for, even though it's the audio recording, it really created for the ambiance of the show.
Right.
And I mean, of course, that is almost like, here, let's set the room and put four microphones over, and you will have a glass, you will have eyes on it. But the joy of podcasting is you can create that, that effect in a little time and really make it,
Right.
Maybe we'll just add a glass of, clinking glass here. That special effect, to just be like, okay, that may cover the sound, the pause, and it'll create for a live theater wherever you are.
Right. And that's, I think it's key. It's like what your... You can choose what you want, that what level of expectation you set. The dastardly, diabolical thing that David did in writing these things as pastiches of 40s radio drama is that means you need to conform to 40s radio drama standards to a certain degree, which were ridiculously high. It was a major mistake. Major mistake. But again, you can put it in the context of a table read or an extremely stripped back production where the key elements drop in and the rest of it just isn't there, and that works fine. I'd say if you're recording everybody separately, the room, things like room tone, even if it literally is just a mild hiss, it covers so much because when those voices are all floating in space, they aren't in the same place. And in a lot of contexts outside of like a disembodied conversation podcast, like we do every week, you can tell, but a little room tone in a loop, just like, and if there's a couple different scenes, you change to a slightly different room tone. Psychologically, it's amazing what it does. And it just holds it together.
Yeah.
And this technical question. Let's say I'm recording my part and a friend of mine is recording his part, but he has an iPhone voice memo.
Right.
Mm. Are there, what sort of, to even out?
I've recorded interviews using my phone. There's, let me get the name of the app right, because the one I used to use is not there anymore.
Ideally, you want it
like this, or your phone on a table between.
Well, I mean, just sort of holding it for the microphone as needed.
Believe it or not, the voice memos app that comes with the iPhone actually does a credible job of recording.
Yeah, I also use the Rode Recorder, RODE. They're a microphone.
They
company.
Make a podcast microphone.
And,
in fact,
yes, they do.
That I don't endorse, but yeah.
I was just going to let it go.
But
the app is really
it's a very
good.
Nice microphone. I just it's too expensive. So
yeah.
You want? I mean, this is what we were saying before we started about how we had the one guy who was in an echoey room, and we sort of had to echo up everybody else to get them to match. And that's sort of what you end up doing is degrading or compressing or whatever all the other voices to try to get them to fit. So it's better if. If it's better if it's above a certain standard, but it depends on what you want to do. You can do podcast recording for interviews or whatever with a smartphone.
Yeah.
I mean, they are made with most of them now with multiple mics, including noise canceling, because they want your call to sound good.
Yeah.
And then when you're not using the phone network and you're recording locally, it sounds way better than that. So,
and Blue Microphones actually has a new microphone that works on an iPad or an iPhone. I think it works on an iPhone that you just plug it in, and then it's not going to be the Yeti, but it also has the omnidirectional. It is,
and it's very
portable.
You
can't just put it on your table and let it go.
And that's the next frontier of this, is that you're eventually going to be able to do all this stuff on your phone, which is going to be crazy.
But. Yeah, I have edited sound on there, too.
Or in your car.
Yes, and then it'll be in your car,
on your
phone.
Watch.
So that recorder, not being a mixer, is that recording two separate tracks?
Yeah, so this is a portable recorder, costs $150, I think, records onto a memory card, and it can record two tracks, and it can actually record four tracks where it records these two and then left and right on this one. So it's not a bad way to do a roundtable recording fairly cheaply. You got to spend on a couple of mics and on a recorder, but then it sounds okay as a portable recording rig. It's actually not bad.
And then is there any there's no mix on that though? Like, that all happens post, right?
Yeah. So what the way that I do it is, I'm going to get a left. In this case, it's going to be a left and right track, and I'm going to be I'll take them apart and try to remove some of the room noise and
And you can get that at like Guitar Center.
Yeah, I got this. I got this at I think B&H online.
Yeah.
It's the Zoom Handy Recorder H4N. Great name. Good old H4N. But I got it because it does. It'll take XLR plugs from two external mics. Plus, it'll also record simultaneously with its internal mics, and you end up with four tracks. Which you can put this on a little tripod, and you've got a three mic setup, which is pretty cool.
What mics are you using?
These are Samson.
What are these?
C15s. I've had them for ages. They're fine. They're not fantastic, but they were a good like $100 maybe microphone.
Yeah, something like that.
They're not. I mean, the problem with pricing is that there's consumer pricing now with some of these USB mics. But then when you get into the XLR mics and all that, now it's professional audio recording, and the charges are a lot worse there. But you can get there are cheap mics that work perfectly fine. There's also a lot of snobbery in audio because it's got to be perfect and all of that, where in reality there are a lot of decently priced mics that sound great. And
and this is different than music, really.
I mean, a lot of these are often used for vocals, actually. These same mics are used for singers.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like the
bar is way lower. Yes.
Right.
Oh god,
the video is like not quite the same.
No.
And I mean, you can go to Blue Microphones website and see, you know, I mean, they've got $1,000 microphones and like real studio and musician mics, but I know a lot of musicians who just use the Yeti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good enough.
It's a great
one. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Before we go, the last thing I would say is, you know, go online. You can hear all kinds of old time radio shows to hear how they did it. Those are all over iTunes. The BBC Radio Player app is free and it plays anywhere in the world. You can listen to anything. You can listen to BBC Radio live if you want. You can listen to some of their podcasts. You can download automatically through there. And you can listen to whatever is currently, you know, they keep stuff for a week or 2 weeks archived. So you can hear the afternoon drama, the Saturday drama, the sitcoms. If you can find the show Cabin Pressure, I highly recommend it. It is hilarious.
It's on iTunes.
It is on iTunes. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch in the third billed role, and he is hilarious. He plays an insecure pilot, and it is not Benedict Cumberbatch like you've ever heard or seen him before. And I'd say he's better than in Sherlock. But it just shows you, again, the power of what the audio can do. I have a much clearer vision of these characters than I do of Sherlock and Watson, and I can see Sherlock and Watson. But you know, there are all kinds of options to hear what's out there and to get inspiration from that. To say, if the BBC can do it and I can do it with this, why not?
Rolling in my car. And I don't think, you know, there's very few times in the theater that I've done that.
Yeah.
You know, that I need to express myself as an audience and just, you know, give feedback to these people who can't hear me.
Yeah.
But as an audience member, it's liberating to, you know, to have that, you know, to be able to express myself.
And yeah. And now it's so easy to give that feedback, to send an email or to send a tweet or say, you know, just, hey, I like your show. Thank you for doing it. And have you thought about doing this? Here's another thing that you guys, like, you know, we get suggestions for topics all the time.
Sure.
You know.
I love the idea of being able to let writers who you like but have not been able to stage their work to use this medium to give them that, even if it was intended to be on the stage and not intended for radio. This opens up, this lowers the bar to getting the public to see works that would otherwise maybe never be staged that could be fantastic.
And it's a different kind of audience engagement, which is one of the main marketing topics.
Exactly.
Sure.
Which again is why I say this can come out of your marketing budget. This is right in that wheelhouse. It gives experience of what you're doing to people who may have never been in your building, never been aware of you. One of the things I was lucky to find once at an old record store in Princeton, go to the Princeton Record Exchange. It's fantastic. Thousands of old, if you have never been able to find it somewhere, go there. I expect the check next week. But I found the original Broadway cast of The Real Thing had recorded the entire play as a double LP, and it does include extra sound, and it's produced for audio. It's not just they stuck mics in the room, and it's fantastic. And you know, I wasn't anywhere near Broadway when that was on Broadway, but I got to experience Jeremy Irons and Glenn Close, and that was amazing. You know, and I can 30 years on, I can still experience Jeremy Irons and Glenn Close, and it doesn't age. It doesn't. You know, no one's going to say, oh, well, that show was 3 years ago. I don't care what the costume designer had to say about it. Now this is an original thing. They don't necessarily know when you made it, but they can still enjoy it. So anyway, I would say that's my mantra. Why not?
Yeah.
So.
And engagement, that this is a medium with amazing levels to get into that marketing speak, amazing levels of engagement. Yeah. As a medium, it has that power. There's got to be there's a match here. We got to get these two things together, right? The match between the skills needed that are in this business of theater and this medium. There could be so much more than there has been.
Creative people in a creative industry, we can do better. You know, it's not that hard. So, anyway, think we can fill 90 minutes?
No.
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 So thanks, everybody.
Yes, thank you for coming. And spread the word, and we'll put this out as a podcast.
Tape
and people can hear it.
Tape before a live studio audience.
I feel like a Norman Lear sitcom.